Okay, we'll go ahead and start. This is Jeff Dyke with UML KVM and Hardware Virtualization. Jeff is graduated from MIT, worked at Digital Equipment for a while. He was an independent contractor after that he became involved in the kernel and then started UML. And so he's here to talk about UML KVM. Oh, one other thing. If you have a question, please try to wait for the mic because they're trying to record everything. Okay? And just raise your hand, I'll bring it to you.
Okay, there are three parts to this talk. I'm going to first talk about the Intel virtualization extensions, the x86 architecture, since they're reasonably new and a lot of people aren't really familiar with the details. Second, I'll go into KVM, which is the interface what recently made it into mainline to interact with the VT extension. And then I'm going to talk about how UML, I'm planning on having UML use KVM to access the hardware virtualization support that's in the newer chips. A couple of years ago, Intel introduced the VT. I think technically VMX is the term for the virtualization extensions. VT is somewhat larger, but in this talk I'm going to use them interchangeably. They were a virtualization extension to the x86 architecture. AMD followed somewhat later with what was then called Pacifica. It now has a new name, which I don't know what it is offhand. But it's largely compatible in the same way that AMD has always been compatible with the Intel architecture. It adds fully virtualized guest context to the chip. And what that means is that you have four rings, guest rings. They can be controlled from the host. All instructions, if you're running in guest ring zero, all your instructions are there, although there's the host has some control over how you execute them. But as far as you're concerned, if you're running in guest ring zero, all the privileged instructions work, and you shouldn't be able to tell if there's anything funny there. Sensitive instructions, which I'll be going over a bit later, they trap to the host. And the host, the hypervisor running on the host, has some guess to control exactly what they do. The upshot of this is that you get pretty much complete virtualization. You can run an unmodified kernel in such a guest context. And there's also some support for pair virtualization and recursion, recursion being guests running guests of their own. The heart of this whole thing is what's called the VMCS, the Virtual Machine Control Structure. It contains all the information about a guest. It effectively is the guest. It contains everything that's known about it, and it contains everything that's needed to save the guest state and restart the guest later on. Among the information in the VMCS are things like registers, segments. The TSC is in there, a bunch of information about the control registers, and some stuff about how the guest is supposed to trap to the host, and a bunch of other information. It's designed in such a way that the VMCS is normally an area of memory, but it's designed in such a way that it can be cached in the host, cached in the hardware, so that if future chips decide to do so, you can cache a certain number of virtualization contacts in the hardware for performance reasons. The VMCS is manipulated with a set of new instructions, VM clear, VM read, VM write, which do what you think they do. This avoids the x86 page table manipulation mistake where on x86, page tables are modified using normal memory access instructions, which has caused no end of difficulties with less than fully paravirtualized Linux kernels. This has the using a new set of instructions has the feature that if the context is cached in hardware, then the instructions know where to find the VMCS in question. And if there is no hardware caching, then these just presumably just turn into normal memory accesses. There's a set of new instructions, VM on and VM off, enable and disable VT. VT, whether VT is even visible or not, is also controllable from the BIOS. So if you have a chip which you suspect supports VT, but it doesn't show up in proxy view info or anything. For example, I believe the core processors have VMX support. If you get one of these things and you don't see VMX in CPU info, it's likely that your vendor turned it off in the BIOS. And if there's no way to turn it back on in the BIOS, you're screwed, basically. You have no access to it. It's a big part of the chip which you can't use, and you should complain to them. I think it's the motherboard vendor more than the PC vendor. I'm not sure where exactly the control is, but it might be the motherboard. I already talked about VM clear, VM read, VM write. VM launch is used to start a guest or restart it. If you have a guest which is paused temporarily because it needed it trapped at the host or something like that, you restart the guest with the same instruction that you used to start it in the first place. And then VM call is somewhat different. It's used by the guest in order to trap out to the host. This is the pair virtualization support. So a guest which knows that it's a pair virtualized guest can use this instruction as essentially a hypercall. Okay, now when a guest traps to the host, that's called a VM exit. There's any number of reasons that a guest will trap out to the host. And these are controllable to a great extent when you set up the VMCS. There's a bitmap in the VMCS which has a bit for every reason that you might want to trap out to the, you might want the guest to trap out to the host. And if in your particular application you want to trap, you put a 1 in that bitmap, and if you don't want it to trap out, you put a 0 there. I have a list of some of the reasons. There's a great number of them, and this is just a sampling of them. Anytime a guest takes an interrupt, you go back out to the host. Sensitive instructions, virtualization sensitive instructions will also trap. And there's more than this, and this is just a sampling of them. Read TSC and CPU ID are somewhat interesting because on a normal CPU, these are executable without any trapping whatsoever from user space. So once you stick them inside a guest context, they all of a sudden somewhat change their semantics. You all of a sudden have the ability to see when someone runs read TSC or CPU ID. Halt is another example. The VM instructions are considered to be virtualization sensitive for obvious reasons. This is how you would support recursion, effectively. Probably not with very good performance, but it would work. If the guest ran a VM on, VM watch, these would trap out, and you would emulate them in the host and make it look like they actually succeeded. So the reality would not be that you have one guest context inside another, but it would certainly look that way from the outer guest. This is a sort of picture of what it looks like. You've got the host. I left out ring 1 and 2 because we don't use them. But you've got kernel space and user space on the host, and then you've sort of got bolted onto the side another guest kernel space and guest user space. In normal usage, in how it's used today, you'd have some sort of hypervisor running on the hardware with who knows what running in its user space. And then you have the guest running in guest context. And then you, assuming they're all Linux kernels, you have a bunch of kernel user space pairs running in separate guest contexts. Now, that's what we have so far. What we really want is for Linux to be the hypervisor. I mean, we use Linux for everything else. We know it, we like it. That's why we're here. We want it to be the hypervisor as well. And so if we have this hardware support and people are going to use it to run virtual machines, we need some sort of access to it from Linux running as the host. And since everything else that looks like a process is a process on Linux, these things should look like processes as well. They should show up in proc. You should be able to look at their resource usage. You should be able to control their resource usage. You should be able to send them signals and have them do reasonable things. And it would be really nice if you could run one just like you run a normal command from the shell. And I thought about this a while ago, and the thing I came up with was you could possibly use an ELF format with a different architecture in the header, and that would get you a different, you could use that to be recognized by a different bin format handler, which would know about BMC. There's another possibility, which I'm going to bring up later in the talk. And this is basically a summary. All your tools should work on virtual machines just like they work on any other service on the system. Everything you know about Linux, about managing non-trivial services, should carry over somewhat to managing your virtual machines. And there shouldn't be that many surprises. Virtual machines are different enough that you need to learn something specific about them, but as long as what you're doing doesn't involve the virtual part of the virtual machines, anything you know how to do should carry over to managing them. And so this is kind of what we want things to look like. Rather than having these things bolted onto the side, we should just have Linux running on the hardware, some sort of normal Linux user space running in Ring 3. And the guest contexts, instead of being off on the side in their own little universes, should look like they're visible, should look like they're present in Ring 3, in the normal Linux user space. So how do we do that? I'm a little hazy on the timing, but my recollection is sometime around August or September, Avi Kivitty, I'm probably pronouncing that wrong, but he introduced what's called the kernel virtual machine, which provides access to the VT functionality through a device driver. The device driver creates DevKVM. You run it, you open it up, and then you do IOCLs on it to do all the various things you can do with it. When a process opens up DevKVM, it becomes sort of the process container for the guest context that gets created as a result. So whatever happens with that guest will be visible when you look at that, when you look at the process that opened the device file. The heart of this thing is the KVM run ioctl. That's what happens, that's what you do when you have the thing set up and you want it to go. It will return with some sort of VM exit reason. And so you pop out of the ioctl with something that says, why did your guest stop? And then you deal with it, and then call VM run again. So your main loop is you run KVM run. When you turn from it, you look at what happened, fix it up, and then start it over again. this is not a bad interface. We all hate ioctls, but as far as interfaces go, this could be turned into something that's not too bad. I'm thinking it's probably going to turn into a set of system calls that which do pretty much the same thing. And this idea of having everything controlled from user space opens up the possibility that you can have a guest look like a normal Linux binary by having it look like a shell script. Use the shebang thing. Have the user space. Christoph is making funny faces at me. Yeah. Okay. Well.
So we have a special handler, Binformat MISC, for this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So we don't really need to make it look like a shell script, which is probably not as easy as it sounds like.
But we do at least have a few possibilities of making these things look like normal processes that you can just run, which is quite nice. So Ingo Molnar is a particular fan of this. He's thinking that it's going to stop being a device driver bolted on the side, and it's going to become some sort of fundamental piece of kernel infrastructure, at which point we're probably looking at assess system calls or something along those lines. The stuff that KVM lets you do are all the things that you expect a hypervisor to be able to do. Create a virtual CPU, initialize it, run it, fiddle the registers, perform address translations, guest virtual or physical address translations, and also to inject interrupts into the guest. It's not really a complete finished work yet. There's no support for guest SMP, as you can see by that little bit of code I cut out of one of the header files. There's also no VM call support, so it doesn't really support paravirtualized guests yet. And you kind of need that for anything that's that's more than trivially paravirtualized. As for clients right now, a version of QEMU runs inside under KVM as a KVM client. Ingo, a week or two ago, announced a paravirtualized Linux kernel running under it, and I'm guessing he used the paravert ops layer, but I haven't looked at the code to get it. Okay. And there's been some mumbling on LKML about someone trying to boot OpenSolaris on that. I'm not sure how the things I was saying were trouble, so I'm guessing it doesn't really work yet. But this does demonstrate that we can do more than Linux on this thing. Although I haven't seen anyone try Windows yet. But at least we do have two varieties of Unix. Okay, so since I do UML, why would I be interested in KVM? Well, one of the major performance problems I have is that UML needs to intercept, nullify, and emulate process system calls. And the only way to do that from user space is ptrace. And so you take a system call, which is reasonably quick normally, and you turn it into something which requires a couple context switches back and forth. And that's just for something like getbid. So you system calls become tremendously more expensive when you try to emulate them under ptrace. The attraction of VT is that a guest can set up its IDT in such a way that it intercepts its own process system calls without involving the host at all. This is one of the things that appears in the VM exit bitmap. You can say, I want to the host can say, I want to find out whenever the guest tries a soft interrupt or not. And in this case, it would say, I don't care. So here, we'd have UML running in guest rank 0. It would be directly intercepting its own system calls. So that would be running at hardware speed with whatever overhead the virtualization stuff imposes. And then the other thing that we need to be able to do is, since UML really likes being a process, it really wants to be able to make system calls to the host. And so this is where the pair virtualization support comes in. You really want to be able to VM call out to the host and have it do system calls on your behalf on the host. That's sort of what exists now. Further performance gains we can probably get by taking advantage of more of the capabilities that you get by being in Ring Zero. Stuff like doing your own memory mapping, you can make interrupts probably a lot less overhead than they are now. As for what works now, there is a UML VT port done. It was done by a couple Russian engineers, Intel engineers in Moscow. They, on the UML side, they mostly, the work was mostly just replacing libc system call stubs with VM call system call stubs. They did something similar to KVM. It's more limited. It was specialized for UML, so there was a lot less of the stuff that you need for an unmodified guest and a lot more of the stuff you need for heavily pair virtualized guests. What they did was let you make system calls through VM call, and the system call would stay inside the kernel, wouldn't head back out into user space like KVM does. And it lets you send signals in. You send a signal to a process which represents the guest on the host, and that the host side of this thing would create a Linux signal frame, and then VM continue the guest as though it had just received a normal Linux signal. And it was 32-bit only. For some reason, they had perfectly good 64-bit hardware, and they installed a 32-bit distro on it, and so they did a 32-bit piece of work. And that was sort of what was scaring me away from updating this thing. I was not happy about having to convert this thing over to 64 bits. But fortunately, KVM had saved me from having to do that. So this is what it looks like. The UML guest runs in guest ring 0. It can do anything it wants, pretty much. Currently, all it does as far as taking advantage of what it can do in ring 0 is the IDP stuff and intercepting its own system calls. Otherwise, it looks exactly like a normal UML. It looks like a process. You can send it signals. You can control it from the host just like a normal UML. And so it's just as manageable and visible as a UML running in a normal process. So what do we need to do to get this thing running under KVM? We need VM call support in KVM, and that looks pretty straightforward to add. The idea is it looks to me like you just need to add the appropriate case statements to a couple switches inside the kernel, inside KVM, inside the driver. And it pops out of the ioctl as just being another reason for a VM exit. And then you can handle the request, the system call from the guest user space, which adds another system call, but it's really easy to implement. The VT port that I have right now, which I got from the Russians, is 2612, so that needs to be fixed. And then looking further into the future, again, we can take better advantage of the fact that we have complete access to a virtualized set of hardware. Memory mapping and signals are the things which come to mind first. Void calling, the host nmap, nmunmap, and protect. And it'd be nice to try to receive signals as ERKs rather than signals, because only a signal frame is a pretty heavyweight thing to have to create. Yeah, that's it. Any questions?
This all seems fairly specific to the Intel IA32 architecture.
It is.
How easy would it be to extend it to other virtualizable architectures, for example, Itanium with its Silvervale extensions?
Well, I don't know about Itanium, but it should have something very similar because it theoretically came from the same company, right? I mean, do you know whether...
It's Silvervale extensions, like Vanderbilt did.
Okay. I mean, with Itanium, I would expect you'd see the same stuff. So yeah, this interface should fit on top of Itanium as well.
Tag DLBs, anytime?
Sorry?
Tag DLBs.
What about them?
I think the AMD implementation has tag DLBs.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Instead of the shadow page tables? Yeah, the AMD did some things differently. That's why I said it's compatible but not identical. AMD decided that Intel did some things wrong, or they decided to be different, and so they did a few things differently, and the page table support is one of them.
When you bring up UML on top of KVM like this, what can it see? What's the exposed file system? Is it seeing the original host, or is it?
Oh no, it's virtualized. I mean,
complete stub environment with its own disk, etc.
Essentially, yeah. There's a terminology thing here. There's aware guess, unaware guess? I actually forget the terminology. Things which know that it's virtualized and things which don't know that they're virtualized. Things which know that they're virtualized will see some sort of UML looks at a file on the host. So it will see a file and it will go seeking around inside the file using open, read, write, close, that sort of thing. Unaware guests will see a dev HDA, dev SD, SDA, whatever, and they will actually do IDE, PCI operations, and those will do the right thing. So the interface, like the devices, depends on whether you have a paravirtualized guest or a non-paravirtualized guest. But in all cases, the guest sees only what you allow it to see.
With memory mapping, how is the guest going to know the real page frame numbers to deal with? How are you going to handle the page table issues if it's managing its own page tables, which I think was what you were heading towards with avoiding call out to mmap and mUnmap?
I would have to say that I don't know the answer to that question. There are all sorts of nastinesses which I'm aware of with page tables, and it may turn out that I hit them and I decide it's not worth it. So I just have to take a pass on that for now.
Jeff, what's the benefit now of running a UML guest under KVM? What advantage do you expect to see?
Speed.
And have you looked at profiling, at paravirtualizing Linux in a more traditional paravirtualized way instead of the traditional UML approach, system call level?
You mean benchmarking UML against paravert ops?
Well, paravert ops as far as running in a KVM container, so.
I haven't. I need to make UML run under KVM first, then we can see what we have. Ingo did the paravert ops thing under KVM, so you can get some numbers there, but we need to actually actually make this thing work under KVM to find out what my numbers look like.
Just following on then from my question about what can the guest effectively see, with the existing UML tools that are out there, how are you finding having them manage a UML instance under KVM versus a traditional UML environment? And following on from that then is, what do we need to do in the Linux space to come up with some generic APIs for managing virtualization? What with Xen, UML, and the other work that's going on now with KVM?
Okay, so to take care of the first question, when you, the M console tool, which is used to manage UMLs, you communicate over a pipe, you send messages over a pipe to a special driver inside UML. The UML side finds out about it with an interrupt, a SIG-IO on that pipe. And so having that continue to work under KVM would require that signal of some sort. Right now it's exactly the same as the Linux signal, but a signal of some sort gets injected into the guest context, and then the appropriate driver handles it, reads the message, and does whatever it needs to do. So there should really be no difference from the user space side. On the host side, you just run the tool, and there's a slightly different mechanism of delivering the signal to tell it that, and delivering the message, but you don't care about that. So it should look exactly the same, and the driver inside UML should look. I guess it look. I mean, the by the time you hit the driver, the signal frame is gone. Well, it doesn't matter anymore. So the driver is exactly the same as well. Your second question is, yes, we do need a common way of managing heterogeneous virtualized environments. That's not really my bailiwick. I try to keep my nose under the kernel as much as possible. But yeah, we do need one, and people are thinking about that.
From the management perspective, there's one that exists already. It's called libvirt. And
that's the
you
red
can go
thing.
To libvirt.org, and there's stubbed out support for various virtualization.
Is that the one that came out of Red Hat?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That
and the one topic that comes up in parallel with this is all of these different solutions will now generate a new slew of device drivers, and we're going to have a problem in the kernel with all of these virtual I/O drivers. But Christoph already said he was going to take care of that. So.
So actually I didn't want to talk about device drivers, but one thing is to mention the management stuff is a much bigger problem than the kernel support we have right now, because we got everyone to forcibly agree to do open source development in the kernel level because they don't have another chance. Well, lots of big companies look for value add at the management side. We fortunately at least have one open source project that tries to cover it all. That's libvirt from Red Hat that Chris mentioned. There's IBM has lots of big bloated stuff. Xen has their own big bloated stuff just for Xen that's using XML, RPC, and SOAP and whatever. So the big companies look for chances to write big bloatware to do that value add for the management. I don't expect the virtualization management wars to be finished sooner than the actual virtualization wars. So, and Chris said about the drivers, so that's an interesting part. It's you have the full virtualization where the guest basically sees something it thinks is real hardware, and that has to be emulated in the hypervisor, or actually usually user space process that does it on behalf of the hypervisor, and that's really slow, and it's pretty much impossible to not make slow. And because of that, people have hypercore-based or shared memory-based device drivers, and the problem is that we haven't really agreed on what's the fastest way there. There's quite a bit of research that needs to be going on. Rusty had a bunch of cool drivers. Ingo is now doing a network driver, so different people are trying different approaches, and that's separate from the actual virtualization. So you could use different virtual driver models with different hypervisors that are kind of not directly connected.
Before Rusty grabs the mic again. Following on from the whole device driver model thing, one issue is where you actually need the physical device inside the VM. It tends to come up in really high I/O throughput spaces. My own particular take on it is because of the stuff we do with Myth TV, we want to pass high definition tuners through into virtual machines so we can virtualize the Myth TV backend and tidy that space up. A lot of that support disappeared in Zen 3, and some of it may or may not come back at some point, so a lot of people are still running Zen 2 based systems if they were playing with Myth. You know, what's happening in that space is with UML and Zen and so on.
That's really simple. The reason it went away is because it was a gaping security hole. Basically, if you allow processors to do DMA from within a VM, you have no security. If you have an IOMMU, unfortunately, they're kind of scarce on the ground, and well, the support for them is really, really bleeding edge at the moment. I've been following, is it Ben Yehuda's work on the IBM one? Yeah.
Again, it's pretty much an x86-only problem, like all the real computers that have forever.
Anybody else? Well, we're pretty close to time, too.
Yep.
So why don't we go ahead and call it finished?
All right, thank you.